we are on air for FanFerRacing's NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off. Tonight we are reviewing the races at Dover Motor Speedway. And in our first half hour, we will do a review of the ARCA East race at Dover Motor Speedway on Friday. And then we'll also review the Xfinity Series race that took place on Saturday out at Dover Motor Speedway. At 9 o'clock, we have our guest coming on board. It is Christian Rose with Cook Racing Technology. He raced at Dover Motor Speedway on Friday and got a top 10 finish in the ARCA Menards Series East. We'll talk to him about that and some other things that he's going to be involved with this week. At 9:15, we'll do our Cup Series race review from Dover Motor Speedway that finished up today after a rain delay, and Chase Elliott was the winner. So we will have NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And definitely looking forward to talking about some hot topics tonight for a full hour and maybe a little longer as part of our bonus overtime material. Joining me shortly will be our co-host for tonight, and I believe that is Jay Hughes. I'm sorry, that's going to be Sal Segala tonight is our co-host, and definitely looking forward to having Sal Segala on the show with us here tonight. Let me go ahead and get started with the ARCA Menards Series. They were racing at Dover this past weekend, and Tara Gray took the new Ford Mustang to a victory at Dover Motor Speedway this weekend. He had a great finish, led about 55 laps, and that was enough to get him that victory for this season. And he brought an end to Sammy Smith's winning streak. I guess it took a new Ford Mustang to make that happen. Gray was at the wheel of the 17 Ford Mustang for David Gilliland Racing. He dominated most of the race, and it was his first East Series victory of his very young career. The race served as a debut for the new Ford Mustang body style in ARCA competition, and Gray used it to put on a clinic. He set the track record in qualifying during the pole and led 115 laps on his way to the checkered flag. Trying to keep an eye out for Sal here. Gray also... which is actually his second victory in the ARCA Menards Series platform this season, following his maiden ARCA Menards Series start earlier this year at Phoenix Raceway when he won that race. So it was a pretty good race for Taylor Gray. Another driver to lead laps on Friday was the ARCA West champion, Jesse Love. He took the lead briefly following a restart on lap 30, but 10 laps later, Gray was able to chase him down and retake the lead just before the first of two race breaks around lap 40. Gray led the rest of the race. Jesse Love ended up finishing second, 1.456 seconds behind Gray. Connor Jones finished third in his debut for Venturini Motorsports, with the ARCA Menards Series points leader Roger Caruth following in fourth. Smith, who opened the East Series season with victories at New Smyrna and Five Flags Speedway, ended with a fifth-place finish. Smith has a very narrow points lead now. Let me see if he is here. Sal is here. And Sal, we went through the top five finishers there in the ARCA Menards Series race. It was Jake Finch, Jonathan Schaefer, Leland Honeyman, Daniel Escato, and Christian Rose rounding out the top 10 drivers. Your thoughts about that top 10 in Markham Menards East at Dover.
Yeah, it was a good race. I'm sorry I missed it, but I caught some of the highlights from it, and you kind of feel bad for Jesse Love, but then man, those gray boys are sure on a roll, when it comes to winning.
Yeah, they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, David Gilliland has really given them some good equipment, to racing now, so I mean, so they're really out there, making a statement and making a name for themselves.
They really are. Taylor Gray is now 2 points behind Sammy Smith in the series points lead. So that is really tightening up for the lead here in the East.
Yeah, it's really it was good to see, a lot of different, drivers in there, like you mentioned, Jake Finch was one of them, he was out here, he raced out here in the All-Star Showdown at the beginning of the season, so it was nice to see him, get behind the wheel, come out here on the West Coast, and then of course, most of his racing is out there on the East Coast.
Right. And Christian Rose, our guest, had a really good finish. He's now fourth in the series point standings as well. So he had a top 10 finish out at Dover this weekend, which was a good run.
Yeah, that team that he's racing with is a really good team. That was the team that Landon Lewis raced for out here at Kern when he won Arco West, Cook Brothers Technologies, when he went out here a couple weeks ago out here and on the West Coast. So, they give him some really good equipment.
They really have, and it's really great. Do you want to cover the series point standings?
Yeah, I just had it right here. Yeah, so the series point standings. Sammy Smith is still lead the points, like you said, and then let me see where I'm at here. Oh, here we go. Gosh, I'm looking at the same thing. Taylor Gray in second, Leyland Honeyman third, Christian Rosen fourth, Stephanie Moyer fifth. That rounds out the top five, and then from there, then we go to Brad Smith at sixth, Daniel Escoto in seventh, Willie Mullins eighth, TG is in ninth, and then,
TG?
Okay, what Sharon said. And then 10th is Jake Finch. They're getting harder and harder to pronounce.
Yes, I know. Daniel, it's really good to see some international names in that top 10 with Daniel Escoto from Mexico and Donald Keeke from Canada. So I really like that we have some international drivers racing in the Arca Menards Series.
Yes, let me see. Trying to see, we got only six drivers that have competed all three races so far this season. So hopefully, as they go, they go to track, a driver will jump in here and there, to kind of help fill out the start, for the start of each race.
Mm-hmm. There were 17 drivers in the race this weekend. From the points position, drivers from position 7 through 10 actually only have two races into the books. But you're right, those top six drivers all have three races in the books, and that's really a good thing. The Arca Menards Series – The next race for the ARCA Menards Series East is coming up this weekend. First of all, I want to say there's a replay of Friday's General Tire 125 at Dover on USA Network this Friday, May 6th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. That's noon. Check your local listings just to make sure it's the same right time for your area. But the ARCA Menards Series East is going to be back in action on May 7th when the series visits Tennessee's Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. So that's going to be a fun race for the ARCA Menards Series East.
Yes, it will. Nashville always puts on a good race, you know, whether it be for the East Series, you know, or else their regular, or else for their, you know, just for their regular program. And I'm sure, just like we see with this, there'll be a lot of, I'm sure there'll be a lot of drivers that will be, they'll be partaking in that race, especially some of the locals that are racing for the championship there at the track.
Yes, indeed. It's the Music City 200. It should start at 8:30 p.m. local time. That's 9:30 p.m. Eastern time. And there will be live streaming of the race via Flow Racing. Now, the ARCA Menards Series is not racing this weekend, but they will be racing next weekend, the following weekend, on May 14th, the Dutch Boy 150 at Kansas Speedway. That will be televised on Fox Sports 1, the Dutch Boy 150. The ARCA West doesn't race again until June 4th, and the next Sioux Chief Showdown race is on June the 11th. So but there are a couple of ARCA East and ARCA Menards Series races coming up here in May over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody's looking forward to the, you know, especially, you know, the drivers, you know, to get back behind the wheel, you know, and get back behind the wheel, you know, for the next few races that are coming up.
Yes, that is true. So it is going to be fun to watch those races, I can't wait to see that happen. Now, Jesse Love actually was the best of the Venturini Motorsports cars on Friday. So it was a good run for Jesse Love, and he was one of the only other drivers to lead that race.
Yeah, it was, like I said, you know, he's, you know, coming from the West, you know, and he's been doing a lot of racing and, you know, for him not to get that win. I know he had to be really super bummed out about it.
Yeah, everybody wants to win, and I get that. It really is, you know, something that you just have to acknowledge it just wasn't in the cards for that day. But second place is certainly nothing to sneeze at. He had a really good run, I thought. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series because they raced on Saturday. The A-Game 200 took place on Saturday in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. And the winner was Josh Berry at the age of 31, driving the number 8 Tire Pro Chevrolet for Junior Motorsport. His crew chief for the race was Mike Baumgartner, and it was the 41st A-Game 200. It was his third victory in 39 Xfinity Series races, his first victory in 5th top 10 finish this season. It was also his first victory and second top 10 finish in 2 races at Dover Motor Speedway. Justin Allgaier finished second, posting his 15th top 10 finish in 22 races at Dover, and his 5th top 10 finish this season. Ty Gibbs in 3rd posted his 2nd top 10 finish in 2 races at Dover, and Sheldon Creed, who finished 8th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. It was an exciting race. He answered a runner-up finish from last year at Dover when Josh Berry took the victory Saturday in the A-Game 200. He held off his junior motorsports teammate, Justin Allgaier, by 0.604 seconds. Getting the lead while battling in lap traffic, Josh Berry went on to lead the last 55 laps of Saturday's race and route to his victory. It was his first victory of the season and third of his career. We talked about second and third place with Justin Allgaier and Ty Gibbs. Noah Gregson finished in fourth place. He was the Dash for Cash bonus winner. The number one is Sam Mayer rounds out the top five. It's the second time in series history that one team has put four cars inside the top five. A.J. Allmendinger finished sixth, while the pole sitter Brandon Jones placed seventh. Sheldon Creed, as we mentioned, finished eighth. Riley Herbst in ninth. And Ryan Sieg rounded out the top 10. Mayer won the opening stage, but his left rear tire fell off his car following his pit stop at the end of the stage. Allgaier picked up his second stage victory of the season for the second stage, and there were seven lead changes among five drivers and five cautions for 36 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 104.091 miles per hour. Your thoughts about that top 10 in the Arkham Menards, I'm sorry, in the Xfinity Series?
Yeah, it was a good race. I thought it was really good. Josh Berry, to get the win, over Justin Allgaier and Ty Gibbs, was a hard fought battle there, to see, Junior Motorsports, continue to, rack up the wins this season. I'm sure, it made Junior happy, to see his, his guys, up there, up there leading and battling, then Noah Gregson picking up the bonus money after A.J. Allmendinger picked up the last two.
That's
Dash for Cash.
Ty Gibbs, the only driver to break up that Junior Motorsports top four drivers in the top five.
Yes, he's still looking. Gosh, man, the kid looks really good. But like you said, the Junior Motorsports team, is starting to come around and starting to, pick up wins, pick up stage points, and most of all, they're seem like they're firing on all four cylinders.
It certainly does, and they have been very, very strong this season and continue to be. I think they're going to continue right on through the season. This was a 200-mile lap, at 200 miles for 200-lap race, and the one-mile concrete that we know tears up tires. And these guys were impressive. All of the top five were very impressive with their results because they took care of their cars and they were there when it counted at the end of this race.
Yeah, and it was good to see Sheldon Creed, grab a top 10.
Yes.
He's been having his issues, I don't know if he's just having trouble, getting acclimated, to the car, from coming from the truck series. But to see him get that top 10, him and also Riley Herbst, who finished ninth, he continues to look, mm-hmm. Good for Stewart Haas Racing.
Now, a few drivers had some mechanical issues. Rajat Caruth in the number 44 had a suspension problem. John Hunter Nemechek, he was my pick for this race. He had some brake issues taking him out of the race. And Bailey Curry in the number 4 had an engine issue. So those three drivers were not able to finish the race due to those mechanical issues. So that's going to be a mulligan for those three drivers.
Yeah, it's going to be – it's a tough track. It's not an easy track to race. when they come to Dover and a lot of things happen and a lot of tight racing and especially with the limited, practices they're given, a lot of these drivers, they're not used to it, but I mean, it's like that. It's the same across the board. So it's just a matter of getting, they're trying to hit on the setup when they first unload and hope, that you can, with that one practice and qualifying, you can hit on something, to get yourself ready, for the race.
Yep. Let's go ahead and hit the points reports for the Xfinity Series kit. So 12 drivers making their way to the playoffs this season.
Yeah. So the driver points are A.J. Allmendinger is leading the points still. Second is Ty Gibbs. Second is Noah Gragson and Ty Gibbs. Right now they're tied, and they both have race wins. But Ty Gibbs would be the tiebreaker since he has 3 wins and Noah's 2 wins. Josh Berry with his win is in fourth. Brandon Jones also has a win is in fifth. And then you got Justin Allgaier that rounds out the top 6. And then from there, then we go to 7th place is Sam Mayer. 8th is Ryan C. 9th is Riley Herbst. Austin Hill is 10th, and he's got a win, so he's already locked in. And 11th is Landon Castle. And 12th is Daniel Hemric. So Daniel Hemric rounds out the top 12 on the bubble, and right behind him is Anthony Alfredo and Sheldon Creed starting to make a move and starting to move up in the point standings.
Yes, indeed. Everybody wants to be in those playoffs. So those drivers that are below the cut line right now are anxious to get a victory this season to push themselves up above that cut line. Now, I believe in the Xfinity Series, you have to be in the top 20 in order to be eligible for the playoffs if you get a win. So there's several drivers that would love to do that, but it's going to be interesting. Up next for the Xfinity Series, the next race for the Xfinity Series, and you got to think about the drivers and, where their strengths are in these races. The next race for them is at Darlington Raceway this weekend. The Mother's Day Throwback Weekend will take place on Saturday, May 7th at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Jay and I will preview the race on Thursday night. There is going to be qualifying and practice session for these guys. But who do you think is going to rise to the occasion at the Lady in Black this coming weekend? So
it's gonna be tough. I think Noah Gragson, he's kind of on a little bit of a roll here. I think he's gonna carry the momentum into there. But then you can't ever count out A.J. Allmendinger and Austin Hill was having a good season, but I kind of think it's gonna be a little bit more of an A.J. Allmendinger Noah Gragson battle. I know everybody's thinking Ty Gibbs, but he's got a lot of skill, he's got a lot of talent, but does he have the patience to race a track, lap after lap after lap like Darlington, which takes a lot of patience and takes a lot of knowing the track.
Yeah, I'm looking at the entry list. Chase Elliott is going to be racing the number 88 Junior Motorsports machine. So he might be one to watch. Tyler Reddick is going to be in the big machines racing Chevrolet number 48. So we've got some spoilers in here for this race. So you're right. I think Gregson's up to competing against him, but he's going to have his hands full. AJ Allmendinger is going to be in the number 10 for college racing. So it's going to be a fun race to watch without much doubt. Brett Moffitt's going to be in Motorsports number 02.
Yeah, definitely with Chase Elliott in there. You know, he's going to, you know, in that number 88, it's always a strong car, you know, driving, you know, for junior motorsports.
It definitely is. I think it's going to be fun to see what these guys do. Ty Gibbs, of course, is going to be in the race. J.J. Haley is going to be in the race. Trying to see David Starr's driving the 108 with SS Greenlight Racing with Jeff LaCourte. So that's Ryan Truex is going to be in the 18 for Joe Gibbs Racing. So there's going to be John Hunter Nemechek back with some Sam Hunt Racing in the number 6. So it's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely it's going to be fun.
Okay. Now, we've got our guest coming on board here in a few minutes. Christian Rose has been on with us before. He races with Cook Racing Technologies, and he's had a fairly good season. He got a top 10 finish out at Five Flag Speedway earlier this season, and then again, this weekend at Dover Motor Speedway, he had another top 5 finish in the general title 150. So he's fourth, as we mentioned, in the point standings for the Arca Menards Series East. His crew chief, by the way, is Bruce Cook, and his spotter is a familiar name, Spencer Davis. Spencer David also races in the Camping World Truck Series. He's also a modified driver, and he is Christian Rose's driving coach. I'd say he's doing a pretty good job this season. And Christian Rose, that was a debut for him at Dover Motor Speedway this weekend. So that's pretty cool that he was able to bring home a top 10 finish in his debut at that track. He will be competing at Fairground Speedway in Nashville this weekend, and then he'll also be racing when the American Menards Series hits Charlotte Motor Speedway. So that's going to be pretty cool to see him on the track in the American Menards Series as well.
Oh yeah, he's going to be he's got his hands full coming up, you know, but he's with a good team, so you know, I'm sure, you know, he's up, you know. Oh man, my back. You know, I'm sure he's up for the challenge, so it's going to be an exciting, you know, time for him. You know, as he continues, you know, throughout the rest of the season.
Absolutely, Christian is here now, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him into the queue, and we'll go ahead and get started. First of all, Christian, I want to say welcome back. We're always happy to catch up with you, and I know there's some great things happening for you in the next few days. And we'll talk about that. But first of all, I want to say congratulations on the top 10 finish out at Dover Motor Speedway this weekend.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me back. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, I mean, two top 10s in a row. I know they're not the way we want to do them, but put us in the fourth in the points. And going forward, it gives us a shot to make a little noise in the East, I think, going forward. So I'm excited about that.
Absolutely. And Dover is not that easy of a, I always think of it as more of a veteran track at Dover Motor Speedway. And you're racing on concrete. Talk about that, because concrete is not something that you race on a lot. It's usually asphalt or dirt. So talk about racing on the concrete at Dover.
Yeah, I would say the biggest difference I felt was as the tires were feeling those seams. If anybody's ever driven down a interstate where you're crossing into concrete seams, that's what it feels like at 130 miles an hour or whatever it is in the corners there. So it has a lot of grip, and I underestimated how much grip you would have in the car. So It was probably better safety than sorry, but we could have pushed the car a little harder. I'm a little frustrated about that, but I know it's my first time being there, and I learned a ton. So towards the end of the race, we were finally clicking some laps off that were where we need to be. So we learned a lot, but when we go back, and Miles is seriously a monster. I can tell you that, that there's a reason it's a monster mile, and I've gained a lot of respect for that place this past weekend.
Okay, that's awesome. Chris sent me some info, and he mentioned in there that your crew chief, of course, is Bruce Cook, but your spotter is Spencer Davis, who races in the truck series and some modified races. Talk about having him as your mentor and coach.
Yeah, Spencer's been huge. He we room together on the road and stuff, and he's somebody you can really lean on because he's been to all these tracks. He's competed. He's won races in a lot of series, and he runs up front. So anytime you can talk to somebody or pick their brain on tracks that you've never been to, especially when they run well, it's a huge help. And he's also a huge help in keeping me level-headed and keeping me focused in the race car. So very lucky to have him. He's been incredible to help me this year. There's been a lot of things he's taught me, and we're continuing to build some stuff to go forward and continue to get better.
Absolutely. Now, I know that Bruce Cook also, I'm going to let Sal talk about that. I'm going to, because I know he's going to make some connections there with Bruce Cook. But I wanted to talk to you about tomorrow. Before you were racing, you were a baseball player at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. And they're going to have a big event tomorrow, Tuesday, the May 3rd. And you're going to be inducted into the Wall of Fame for your success in Division I baseball. Talk about what that means to you.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor. I never would have thought that would be something that came up, and it's pretty cool. After Dover, I've got a lot of friends up here on the shore still, and this is all familiar area, anywhere from Princess Anne, Maryland, all the way up to Dover. There's been a lot of memories, a lot of stuff I've been able as a kid coming here, growing up, the vacation, and having close friends on the shore now. So I've stayed up here on the shore all weekend. It's been nice to get out and do some hunting and fishing and stuff like that. But we're looking forward to that. I mean, it's a true honor. I never, like I said, a million years would have thought that to be the case, and something even a possibility. So it means the world. I'm very excited to go there and talk to the students and tell my story about what we're doing now. And hopefully I can inspire future students from the school to chase their dream. That's really what the speech is going to be about tomorrow, because I had a lot of good coaches at that school. I made some of my best friends there, Coach West and Coach J.O. I mean, they were huge and instrumental in making me the person having the mentality of doing a race car. So very thankful to the school and very thankful for having the opportunity, and this is pretty dang cool.
Yeah, that's got to be quite an honor. Now, you're from Martinsville, West Virginia, and when you were playing college baseball, it was right across the street from Dover Motor Speedway. How surreal was that for you to be racing there this weekend just before this Wall of Fame induction?
Yeah, I mean, my last year, senior year, 2018, we had to sweep Dell State to make the MEAC playoffs, and it was against one of our former coaches, so it was really cool to go up there, and we did that. We swept them, and we got to get in the playoffs. So I remember Coach told me if we swept that he would give us Sunday off, and I was able to go to the races in town that weekend, and I went right across the street that weekend and watched the Cup race over there on Sunday. So to be 4 years now removed of that, and to be actually racing around that place, it was cool to take it all in. Now that it's all over, I've kind of taken a step back and really realized how cool that was. So a dream come true, really.
Yeah, that is very cool. And a lot of people don't know, you've only been racing for 3 years. You haven't had the traditional path that most racers have of starting from a young age and kind of grooming for several years before you get to this level, and you're doing very well with just three races under your belt, or 3 years under your belt. And another driver that started late was Charlotte driver William Byron. Have you ever had a chance to maybe talk to him about his experience of moving up the ranks?
No, I haven't got to talk to William personally. You know, I use him as somebody I look at and how his success has come to him and everything. And like you said, he started later in his career too. So there are some people like him and Raja and some other people I look at that started younger or later in their career, racing career. And I'm using that to show it can be done. We're still learning. You know, there's times where we go perform really well. Like last year, we performed so well in the West Coast and Vegas and Roseville. We had a legit chance to get a top three at Roseville and you know, having my expectations there. And then we come and I got to settle back to reality sometimes knowing we're going to these places for the first time. And it's just the athlete and the competitor in me that, you know, I want the results now, but I understand there's got to be work you got to put in. So, yeah, you do try to, as a driver, study other drivers. And I was a huge fan growing up. So knowing William's story and, like I said, Raja and some other people in the sports that started later, it's something that can be done. And we're just going to continue to push forward and get better and just keep running all the laps. And we're coming off of, you know, 2 top tens here. And like I said, it put us somewhere decent in the points now. We're sitting 4th. So I think we can run with the 02 car at some of these places. And if luck comes our way, hopefully we can run them down the points and at least fight for 3rd or 4th in the points of the season.
Okay, that's fantastic. Okay, Sal Sigala is here. He's our co-host tonight, and I know he has some questions for you, Christian, so I'm going to pass the mic over to him.
Hey, Christian, first of all, thanks for coming back on the show again. You know, it sounds like you're really having a really interesting, but you know, a really fun season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's cool to go to a lot of these places. It's the first time restricted plate racing at Daytona. First time feeling the speed and the G's and everything you feel around a place like Dover. Obviously, we would have wanted to run a little better, and that's on me, and I'm going to continue to learn and get better at some of these places. But when you look at some of the tracks we have on the schedule and some of these places, it's all about learning this year and trying to run all the laps and, you know, try to put ourselves in the best position so we can learn. And it's been a very, very fun season, but it's also frustrating for me in some places because I feel like I could have performed better. And when we finish these races, I go back and we're always the fastest at the end of the races, which is, I guess, common for somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience where you're continuing to learn throughout the race. And every time we do, I wish we could restart the race because we always get better as the day goes. So, yeah, it's been an eventful season, but right now I'm pretty pleased with where we're sitting in the points.
You know, and actually, you know, when we talk about Cook Brothers Technologies, you know, the teams they put together, you know, you just had one of your teammates last weekend, you know, pick up the win out here at Kern, Landon Lewis, who's being coached by Ron Hornaday Jr.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool to see the team. I was very amped for him. I texted Bruce immediately. The next morning, I had gone to sleep because it was a West Coast race. But I texted those guys, and it's cool to see them run well. Amber ran well out there as well in our other car. So it's cool to see the team get the results they deserve. You know, Bruce has good stuff. He's got really, really competitive stuff. He gives you a chance to go out there and perform at the top of your – or the best of your ability. So when you see a teammate win and everything, you know, it gets you confidence as a driver knowing, you know, we should be able to back that up and do the same thing. So – I've got confidence going to Nashville. It's a place I've been in a super late model before. It's one of the only two places we're going to go this year that I've had experience at before in some sort of car. So Nashville's a place that circle that we should run pretty well.
You know, and any time a team like that can put together, you know, a stable of drivers, you know, especially young drivers, you know yourself, you know, like you, you know, you'd also mention Amber, you know, who's also running as Landon's teammate, you know, and then to go out and get the results that you guys are gaining against some of the bigger teams, that's, you know, like out here on the West Coast, you know, you got Bill McNally Racing, you know, you got Sunrise Racing, and, you know, there's a couple other teams, you know, but even on the East, you know, to to get those results. It's not easy because these teams have been around for so long.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best part about racing for Bruce is, you know, he does build race cars that can go compete with those guys. We proved it by winning out there last week. And then we also, when we were at Phoenix, we outran a lot of those bigger teams throughout the majority of the race. I just made a mistake in the race to kind of put us behind. So the cars got speed, and we are able to compete with those bigger teams. It's pretty cool to see a team like Bruce and everything those guys do with four full-time employees able to show up to the racetrack and with everything going right that we can outrun or run right with those bigger teams.
So other than, the running the Arca East, is there any other super late model races that you have coming up?
Towards the back half of the season, I think we're going to try to run some late model stuff. We toyed around with the idea of doing some stuff in the summertime, but I know these bigger events towards the end of the year are some things we have circled. Nothing official yet that I can announce or say, but there are, you know, towards the season after the NASCAR stuff kind of slows down, we're looking so we can stay in the seat and keep racing.
Yeah, because actually Nashville, you got the All-American 400 coming up in October, which they run it the last weekend of October. And, I kind of figured, with your experience out there, that might be maybe something you might have circled on your calendar as a maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go back to that. I don't think we have plans to run Nashville this year and anything outside the ARCA car, but I would love to at some point get back in the Super or something around, or a Pro or anything around Nashville. Nashville's a lot of fun. It's high banked. It's worn out and allows the driver to really be a driver. It's not one of these places that you're wide open to the floor or just lifting the throttle and then getting right back into it. But it's one of those places tires are going to wear out. You're going to be sliding around, and it allows the driver to really show what they can do. And that's a very cool kind of place. There's not a lot of tracks like Nashville out there.
You know, and then, of course, you know, everybody wants to – they all want to make it out the first weekend of December, you know, to the Snowball Derby. You got the Snowball Derby, and you got the Snowflake 100, which is another Pro Late Model race.
Yeah, that's something I have circled very high on my list at some point is the run the Flake and the run the Derby. It's really cool every year to go down. And I've never been to it personally, but to watch it on TV every year and you know, to see the – amount of late models that show up just for that race, let alone the talent that shows up the race there, is pretty dang cool.
Yeah, you know what? It's I'll tell you, for any driver, any fan, I've always, even to go as a fan, I always tell people, you know, if you get a chance, get out there. I think this year will probably be my eighth or ninth one that I go out there and I photograph. And I know I look forward to it every year. I just look forward to the competition. I look forward to the drivers that go out there. I especially look forward, you know, to the newer drivers who've never been there before, you know, and just, you know, see them, you know, when they get out there for, you know, especially when they're getting ready to qualify, which is one of the biggest days out there other than the race itself.
Yeah, honestly, in my opinion, it's the most intense qualifying session in the country. That's my opinion. To make the show and to see some of the guys that go home or even in the last chance race when – you know, you got Cup guys and Xfinity guys and truck guys that are sometimes on the verge of not making the show on time, and it's crazy to think that a tenth of a second separates 1/10 of 30th on the qualifying board is pretty insane.
Yeah, it is. I went bad. You know, I just want to just say best luck the rest of the season. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay. Now before we go. I know that West Virginia Tourism is a big marketing partner that you have on your cars this year. But at Dover, you had a new marketing partner with Freedom Fighter Outdoors and recognizing a couple of veterans. You want to talk
about
that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. First of all, West Virginia and what they do to allow me to be on the racetrack and Governor Justice and what he believes this can do for the economic development side of our state, and just having West Virginia traveling down the interstate on the hauler or where we're racing each week, you know, it means the world to have the opportunity, but it's also very cool to have the West Virginia Tourism Department shown on TV and all over the country. So it's very cool as a West Virginia to be able to represent my state on and off the racetrack and going to the Freedom Fighters Outdoors. Those guys, it's incredible what those guys do. Our men and women overseas is something that means a lot to me. All my friends are in the service. My granddad was a World War II veteran, and it was very cool to have Mr. Coffey out there, who is a 10-year vet with the Marine Corps, hanging out at the racetrack. And anything we can do for those guys to give them a chance to get out to the racetrack and just have some fun, it's something we love to do, and it's something we're going to do going forward. So I partner with those guys, and you know, they had a blast. It's something they want to come back and do again, and it's really cool to be able to give back to that side. It's, like I said, something to me that's very important to me, and nobody can do what they do in this country without those boys and girls, I can tell you that. So pretty dang cool to have them out there.
Yeah, it definitely is. We really appreciate all of our veterans, past and present and future, really, and all that they do to protect our freedoms. So, Christian, again, it's been great having you back on the show. We never have enough time, so we'll have to look to see where we can have you back on the show somewhere down the road here. But really always enjoy catching up with you. And we always look for that number 42 Cook Racing Technologies vehicle out there on the track.
Absolutely. But guys, thank you so much for having me. It means the world to be able to talk about what you would call a job. It's pretty cool to come on here and talk about it. So thank you guys so much, and I look forward to being back.
Okay, Christian. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Take care, guys.
All right. You too. All right. That is Christian Rose. He's the driver of the number 42 again for Racing Technologies, coming home with the top 10 finish this past weekend. And a lot going on, you know, very successful with his baseball career. And just 3 years ago, came into, you know, learning about racing and becoming a race car driver. And I think he's doing a fantastic job, Sal.
Oh, yeah, he is. You know, excuse me. Yeah, you know, in any time, like you said, you know, he can, you know, go from one sport, you know, to another, you know, and find that balance, you know, and be successful at both of them. You know, it's always, you know, it's always neat to see.
Yeah, it definitely is. Okay, we need to now move on to our Cup Series, because the Cup Series race this weekend, and actually they started on Sunday and finished on Monday, the race earlier today, and that was an exciting race. It was the 53rd annual Duramax Dragging 400 presented by Relodyne. The race winner is Chase Elliott at the age of 26, driving the number 9 Napa Auto Parts Chevrolet, team owner Rick Hendrick, and his crew chief is Alan Gustafson. It was his 14th victory in 232 Cup Series races, his first victory in 8th top 10 finish this season, and his second victory in 9th top 10 finish in 12 races at Dover. Wow, has it been that many already? Ricky Stenhouse Jr. finished second. He posted his 4th top 10 finish in 19 races at Dover, and his 2nd top 10 finish this season. Ross Chastain in third posted his first top 10 finish in 8 races at Dover. And Harrison Burton, finishing 24th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, it was an exciting race. Chase Elliott takes home his first win this season. And he's right now the series points leader. He earned his first victory in Monday's weather-delayed race. He led the final 53 laps of the 400-lap race, pulling away from Stenhouse Jr. for a 2.577 second gap between first and second. The race was slowed 12 times for a caution, including a red flag weather delay on Sunday that moved the race just to Monday. He won that race today, and Stenhouse again was second, followed by Chastain. Then it was Christopher Bell, Alex Bowman, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, the pole winner Chris Buescher, Kevin Harvick, and Eric Jones, rounding out the 10. Elliott took the lead from Chastain with 52 laps left in the race. he pulled away from the field to win by more than 2 seconds. Stage one was won by Denny Hamlin. Stage two by Ryan Blaney. There were 17 lead changes among 10 drivers, 13 cautions for 75 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 104.507 miles per hour. Your thoughts about that race and the top 10 drivers, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, it was good. You know, I really thought this is going to be another race that Kyle Busch is going to win, and then, you know, then I guess they talked about, you know, his pit stop strategy or something like that, you know, that cost him. But Kyle Larson, you know, to finish sixth where he did after he had that spin, you know, where he just barely, well, he missed the wall, you know, and then they kept showing the Jimmy Johnson spin after that, you know. Gosh, I mean, we only need to see it once. We only need to see it five, six times, you know. But then, you know, Ross Chastain, man, oh, gosh, you know, this team, you know, man, somebody made a comment.
I am proud of that guy.
I've seen a comment on social media today, and somebody said, Derek, comparing him to the Rams quarterback, you know, you put him, you know, with the good team, you know, and he shines. You know, they said the same thing with Ross Chastain. You know, they give him a good car, you know, and he shines. I mean, he's just really, really been a, you know, a, you know,
a force,
yeah. And then you look at his owners, Pitbull, you know, a singer, you know, and then you look at, you know, Danny Hamlin's team, you know, which is, Michael Jordan, and then you go to Jesse Luigi and Xfinity, who has Emmitt Smith, you know, an ex-Cowboys running back. And I mean, Pitbull, it seems like the singer knows more about racing than a basketball star, you know,
I would say a lot of the credit, I believe, goes to Justin Marks, who is a former race car driver. But they talked a lot on Sunday about his management style for the team. He was saying, we don't have, like, T-shirts with just the number one on there, or just the number 99. It always has the number one and the number nine. That they work cohesively as a team, and you know, they all sit down together and talk about what's happening with each other's car and what they want to do to make it better. And it's really paying off. I give a lot of the credit to Justin Marks.
Yes, you know, and like you said, you know, he brings a lot of knowledge, you know, to the team, you know, and I'll tell you that number one team, watch out come the playoffs, you know, if they keep at this pace, you know, even though, you know, you still, you know, you got HMS, you know, who now all their everyone on the team has a win, you know.
Yep, they're all in.
But you know, it looks like JGR is just having their issues. I mean, Danny Hamlin lost a tire, you know, today, you know, which is going to cost his team, you know, four weeks without the crew chief and, you know, without the tire changer and, you know, and, gosh, it just, I mean, of course, Christopher Bell, at, you know, he's not nowhere to be seen this season.
Mark Truex Jr. is not winning yet.
Yeah. Same thing with Truex. You know, we're just not seeing, you know, the intensity from Truex. But, you really got to, you know, hats off to the HMS, you know, once again, you know, for grabbing that, you know, Chase Elliott, you know, grabbing that win for, you know, for finally getting in victory lane. Ricky Stenhouse finishing second. Gosh, that was a really good run by him. You know, you really got to, you know, look at that. And then Alex Bowman just keeps nicking, you know, and just, you know, trying to keep, you know, inside the top 10 right there.
A couple of drivers did have some brake issues, A.J. Allmendinger and B.J. McLeod. I still haven't figured out what DVP stands for, but Cody Ware and Austin Cindric both have that designation. Obviously, they had issues, and they did not have the finishes they were hoping for. But before we run out of time, Sal, I want to make sure we cover the points report.
Okay. So now the points are Chase Elliott leading the points still. Brian Blaney in second. William Byron in third. Kyle Busch in fourth. Alex Bowman fifth. Ross Chastain in sixth. Martin Truex seventh. And Kyle Larson round out the top eight. Not much there. Chase Elliott, gosh, 50-point lead over Ryan Blaney, which is a lot of points. But still, William Byron is still leading the points, the playoff points with 13. And then from 8th, then we go to 9th, which is Joey Logano. 10th is Christopher Bell. 11th, Eric Almirola. 12th is Kevin Harvick. 13th is Chase Briscoe. 14th is Eric Jones. 15th is Austin Dillon. And rounding out the top 16 is Tyler Reddick. And only 8 points over Daniel Suarez, who is sitting in the 17th spot.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting because you've got Tyler Reddick above the cut line, and there's Daniel Suarez, Austin Cindric, Chris Buescher, and Kurt Busch, drivers all below that cut line. Denny Hamlin keeps making his way up. He's at 23rd now. So he's trying to move up the list. Brad Keselowski is 30th right now. He must be in the top 30th in order to get into the playoffs if he should come up with a win this season. So a lot going on these points. And only two drivers have two wins so far this season, William Byron one and Ross Chastain the other one. So really good run for both of those drivers.
Oh, yeah, it is. You know, to see Kevin Harvick, you know, kind of solidly, you know, inside the top 16. But, you know, there's still a lot of racing left to go. You know, it's, you know, see who's going to pick up the next win. You know, as far as the drivers who don't have a win yet, you know, Martin Truex still down with Kyle Larson only has one. You know, last year he was just the dominant force in the series, and all of a sudden this year, you know, he's just like any other driver, you know, trying to get his wins, you know, and, you know, stay in the, you know, he's already locked into the playoffs. But I mean, even Joey Logano is still without a win, which is something we're not used to seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really cool. We didn't really get a chance to talk too much about short track racing this weekend. Are you going to be at the racetrack this weekend, Sal?
No, you know what? Actually, I'm off until I get back from my vacation.
Okay.
So
there's another young
yeah.
gray. That's preparing for their first start at Millbridge, and that's Delaney Gray. She's a young lady getting ready to start her career, so watch for that this weekend. Also, 14-year-old Evan Dex wins the Leonard Evans 150 this past weekend in the Northwest Super Late Model event. So, again, this is where you see a lot of the up-and-coming racers that we'll be seeing in the Arca Menards Series, and eventually some of these guys will move on to the NASCAR Cup Series. So a lot of examples of that over at Racing America. Flow Sport Racing has the Arca Menards Series East Race from Dover. Actually, it was also on Flow Sport. And again, that the delayed race broadcast is going to be on USA this Friday. So definitely a lot to look forward to there. Sal, I appreciate all that you do and that you know, you're able to be a part of our radio broadcast. So thank you for all that you do.
And you know what? And a big hats off to you, Sharon. Not once did you call me Jay tonight.
Oh, I really had to work hard at it. Thank you.
So thank you for that. But anyways, we'll talk to everybody next week. You guys have fun on the rest of the radio show. And have a safe week. Have a safe weekend. And we'll see everybody next Monday. Good night.
All right. We'll look forward to talking to you then. All right. Coming up is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. I don't see Jay here yet. I know he's planning to be here. So hopefully he'll be on shortly. Let me just send a message to him to see where he's at. So, moving right along here, we've got a lot of hot topics to discuss here tonight. And joining me for our Hot Topic Sound Off tonight will be Jay Huseman. Andy has to work tonight, as does Mike Orzel. I haven't heard from Tommy or from Owen. I was hoping maybe one of them would be able to be on our Hot Topics tonight, but I haven't heard from them. But boy, we've got a lot of topics that have been posted on our Teams page. So looking forward to having that here in just a few minutes. Jay is responding to me, so real quick I'm going to check and see where he's at. Okay, so anyway, we're looking forward to we're still waiting for Jay, so I'm going to pull up and see if he's come on here yet. Not yet. Okay. Again, I think he's misunderstanding me that we are on right now. Okay, so again, looking forward to having Jay here so that we can talk about some hot topics. I'm going to run down the list real quick here and let you know what some of these hot topics are. Hopefully we'll hear from him very shortly here. Some of our hot topics here tonight include charter system could come into play this year or next year. There's an article from Beyond the Flag, the overlooked rule that could put one cup team at risk. So we will talk about that a little bit. There's also a post here posted by Mike. You might have seen this highlighted in the pre-race information on Sundays, but there's a driver, a little-known driver, L.W. White, that has came and went and vanished as quickly as he came in, and he is been discovered. And so I know Race Hub is doing some things about that, and there's been some articles written about that as well. And Jay is now here. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I apologize. I did not catch the time change there that we were doing hot topics early tonight. So I apologize for being late.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I knew that was unusual for you, and I didn't think you were catching on that it was an early start. So I kind of put it in big letters there, but we are ready for hot topics here tonight. I think it's just going to be you and me, Jay. I didn't hear from Tommy, and I didn't hear from Owen or anybody else from the Fan Racing crew. So I think everybody's kind of got something going on here tonight. Let's go to our first hot topic.
Okay, well, I heard you talking a little bit there about L.W. Wright. Is that what you wanted to start with?
Yeah, we can. I just was trying to go through. I was going from the bottom up with what some of the hot topics on our list are for tonight.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's an interesting story, and I've heard little bits and pieces of this before. I know Mike put it up. He likes to dig up these things and find these. It's certainly been interesting, again, if you're a historian of NASCAR, to look back at his history and what the situation is with that, that nobody had ever heard of him but accepted him into racing, and then he kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I know that they've done some Mike put quite a few. I don't know how I'm going to put covered on here because we've got several all under the same thread. I first saw this on a pre-race coverage about this L.W. Wright. And I thought it was intriguing because he kind of was a con man. He got some people to sponsor him and for this race. I forget where it was now, but it was for one race. He came and he raced. It was kind of obvious to everybody that he wasn't very skilled as a driver, but he was out there on the track. Things kind of fell apart very quickly after that race. I think he ended up leaving the race. Nobody ever talked to him. He ended up leaving the race and was never heard from again. And so I guess some of the journalists have kind of gotten together and tracked him down. And now they are going to be talking to him and doing an interview with him. So a very intriguing story that this guy was able to, first of all, get the sponsorship money and all the things. But he kind of did it. He wrote checks that turned out to be not good for getting the entry fee to get into the race and all kinds of things. It was a few weeks later that those checks were bouncing. And by that time, he was long gone.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, you don't hear about this a lot. And as we're thinking about that, if you think about the movie Days of Thunder with Tom Cruise, when they did that story, there was that subtle storyline in it when Tom Cruise, Cole Trickle, talked about his dad selling junk bonds in order to fund the team. We have seen some sponsorship deals here recently that have been iffy or had some issues. So it's not a huge thing, but it still does even happen, even in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately it does. But this guy's been missing for 40 years. They did it. I guess that's on Scene Vault podcast. They did an interview with him. And if you go on Twitter, you'll be able to hear that podcast of the interview that they did with this driver. So for those that might have an interest in hearing about that conversation with this guy that's been missing for 40 years, it might be intriguing to listen.
It's always interesting to read about some of this, especially for myself as kind of not a full historian. But I do like to go back into the history books, if you will, or find history on the internet now. It's not actually into the history books, but to go back and look through some of this and understand, again, where the sport has been, where it comes from, and where we're at now, to see that comparison. I enjoy doing that anyway.
Yeah. It's part of the NASCAR history. And, it's just an intriguing story. So the story of L.W. Wright, ESPN also has a write-up about this driver. and one of the longest mysteries in NASCAR. He raced, let's see, I just lost my place here. He got on Talladega Speedway for 13 laps during the 1982 Winston 500. And like I say, these people from Scene Vault tracked him down and did an interview with him. And it's all very interesting. So he only raced for 13 laps. It was obvious that he wasn't really keeping up. So going to be interesting. Now, mixed in between here, and I'm not sure how this ties in. Do you know how this ties in, Jay? Mike says, supposedly this guy has the fire suit worn in the only confirmed picture of LW. And it's the Jeff Gordon 24 replica DuPont NASCAR fire suit race uniform. It's a kid size 7. That he's selling, and that's part of how, is that part of how they tracked him down?
I was going to say, I think that is what sparked the interest in finding him and undigging the knowledge of who he was and how he ended up with that suit then. That's kind of what started the whole intrigue on the situation with it.
Okay. And then somehow we've got the charter system under this same thing, so maybe we should go to that after we finish this so that I can put covered for both of those topics.
Yeah, I had put that one up. I thought I had it as a separate, but maybe I put it in under the wrong.
Yeah, you put it in under this thread, so it makes it hard for me to cover it in here. Is there anything that you more that you wanted to say about this LW Wright thing?
No, like I said, it is kind of an interesting story, and like I said, I do see some similar things in today's racing. And then, like I said, the fact that it kind of Days of Thunder kind of came to mind. So it's one of those storylines in it. You know, we think back to of even how the sport started in moonshining. You know, some people don't want to hear about that, but that was kind of the thing back in the day of the con man type deal. You can't ignore it. And like I said, I mean, it's a little bit different in today's world, but there's still some applicable things that can be learned from it.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the charter system could come into play this year or next year.
All right, the one I put up there, and I see now where I got it underneath that one. Sorry about that, too. Several charters had changed hand before the 2022 season, which doesn't exempt them, though, from the minimum performance standard. Essentially, that if you finish in the bottom three in points for three consecutive years, that NASCAR can take the charter away from you. And there's been a lot of changes of teams, and one of them being Rick Ware had two of them. The one that they felt was more at risk, they had Corey LaJoie take over this year, and right now is in position to not be in the bottom three at the end of the year. He's currently, I believe, 28th, which would pull him out of that risk situation. But what I think needs to be looked at is NASCAR has kind of allowed this manipulation of the rule by changing the charters and the teams that have them in order to prevent that from it being the same team for 3 years in a row. But with teams like Junior Motorsports that are looking for a charter possibly, I've got to throw that in there, possibly. And other teams that we've talked about possibly expanding and that search for charters, I think NASCAR needs to take a look at this of if they want 36 competitive cup-level teams out there, that they might need to look at this and enforce that rule, and because we haven't seen it yet as that they took one away from them. So whether or not we see that in the next couple of years.
Okay, where they take a team and NASCAR takes over the charter, you mean? You think that
yeah,
we might
whether or not
that?
they take the charter away from a team, which obviously is not top competitive team.
Okay, and right now that team that's vulnerable is Rick Ware Racing.
That is the most prevalent one. There are a couple that have been in and out. I know JTG, I think, scrolling down here, was one of them that was mentioned, but right now they're sitting pretty good.
Right. Okay, so, yeah, this is something that NASCAR will need to take a look at. I would think now that that has been talked about, they'll provide some clarification if they're pressed for that. But they haven't, they have been pretty lenient with allowing teams to, and that was part of the deal, I think, when they put this charter system together, it was to create value so that if the team did leave the sport, that they would be able to sell their team and, have some value to it. So we'll have to see. And it does make sense to me that NASCAR would take over a charter if the team's underperforming to the standards. NASCAR's Cup Series is an elite series, and the elite drivers should be racing in this series. And teams should be making progress as well within the series. I think the days of having a team in the series just to be in the series, I think those days are over. They're looking for these teams to perform. Unfortunately, though, somebody's going to have to be in the bottom three. I do like to say that it is a team that has to be in the bottom three for three consecutive years because somebody can have a bad year. But still recover, at, like you mentioned, Rick Ware with Corey LaJoie. That team's made progress this year, and they're no longer in that position. So I think having it be three consecutive years is an important distinction. And we'll have to see if somebody is going to be affected. Do we have a team that's had two consecutive years that is the most vulnerable to that happening again? Are they still doing poorly this year?
Well, like I said, the number seven of what was the 77 of Rick Ware, but by transferring it to the number seven, they kind of reset that. Although it stays with the charter, the number seven has a better opportunity because they have a full-time driver to improve upon that. So that's why they moved it over. And for fans to understand that, I don't know how to – basically you're giving it to a better team to try and improve and get them out of that three-year window, and then they get – if they lease the charter to the team. And I think back to – I believe it was – I'm trying to remember who leased theirs to the Wood Brothers for the first year that before they had a full-time charter. They knew that the Wood Brothers team – would probably get them out of that top or the bottom three for that year. Then they get the charter back, and that hits against it have been wiped out. So that's where that whole trading the charter, leasing it for a year was. I understand that there's so many layers to it because it does benefit them, but trying to get all this in my head and straight. Understand the value of the charter system when they brought it forward. Again, I've never been a fan of locking teams in or the top 36, but team owners had no retirement plan, essentially, is what it is. Mm-hmm. If they got out of racing, all they could do was sell off their equipment, and it was normally very little on the dollar as far as what they got in return, partially because it is outdated. But so I understand the concept and appreciate that. However, it's just like anything we talk about when it comes to racing, teams find a way to manipulate it. And that's what I don't like, is how it's kind of been manipulated. Now, you made a very good point of it's not like a one and done, you know, if you can't perform here and now, you know, NASCAR said it's over the course of 3 years. But the team should have to earn that themselves. Like I said, not lease it out to a top team get it back, and that's all been cleared out because of the performance of a better team. You need to improve your team. And like I said, now when we talk about GMS come in this year, Trackhouse Racing, they have showed they want to be a top competitive team. They should be able to get a charter. And right now I'm going to just primarily use Junior Motorsports. Right now, if they want to get in, they're having to pay, I believe the last charters went for $10 million and up, or that was the asking price. We saw that with Trackhouse. They just bought out a Chip Ganassi organization, which then Ganassi got something in return. So that did work for everybody. Down here, it's not working as well, and especially if you're holding that charter, you can try and demand more than – I understand it fluctuates. The price fluctuates, but the value of a charter, I think, was overpriced at that point, but that would put it in the window of how badly do you want to get in. And that's where I think NASCAR needs to control that of, hey, we want a top competitive team in versus one that's just out there holding on to it, running in the back and holding on to it. And I think Rick Ware Racing realizes that. They have sold one of theirs, and they did make within their own team a move to improve it on their own. So I like the fact that they're trying to – they did it within their own team, I'll say that, so versus an outside team. And not that Hendrick would have traded, but trading it to Hendrick, have them bring it up in points and then get it back so that they didn't have to.
Right. And I would say if NASCAR, apparently NASCAR doesn't have a problem with it. So I don't know that it's an overlooked rule. I think this is just something that I understand what you're saying, but NASCAR hasn't changed the rule. And I think if they saw a problem with it, they would change the rule. Do something different. But again, I think the rules are in place because they want to improve those teams. And I think if you're selling the team, leasing the team for a year to give it a chance to do better, I think, you know, when you get it back, it's their responsibility to make sure that that car is doing better. They should be learning from that experience. So I think that's why NASCAR is maybe being lenient with that, because they're allowing them the learning curve of what they need to do to be more competitive within the sport. So I know this article deems it as an overlooked rule, but I think it's just something that NASCAR has allowed to happen. How long has the charter system been in place now?
I want to say we're coming up on 6, maybe 7 years that the way the charter system has been in play. Coming up on that, it's at least 5 years.
And I think some teams have kind of weeded out, if you will, because they could not perform, and they ended up leaving NASCAR. And new teams now have come into the sport, and I think that's a sign of a very healthy system. So I really think that if they give it a 10-year window, let's say, for this, what you're terming as a manipulation of the system. But to me, NASCAR's left the system open for a purpose to allow these teams to go through that learning curve and then get back on board with improving their team. At some point, yeah, I could see them saying, okay, we've given you a 10-year window, let's say, to get your team on board and competitive as a member of the premier series of the sport. But now we've got to kind of turn that faucet off and make some adjustments to the process. I don't see it as an overlooked rule. I think NASCAR is purposefully leaving that window open to give these teams a chance to go through that learning curve. Just a perspective on it.
you're right. That article particularly, like you said overlooked. I don't know that it was overlooked. It wasn't necessary to take a hard look at it in the past because we didn't have the teams coming in that we have. And you pointed it out. Mm-hmm. Starcom Racing was one of them, and that one is the one that went to Team 2311. Derek mm-hmm. Cope and that team, the Starcom team, said, okay, we know we're not competitive. There's an opportunity for a team like 2311 to take it if we sell it out and have a more competitive sport. And they decided it was their time to get out. They weren't making the improvements mm-hmm. or whatever the decision was that they were getting out. So there's parts to both of it. I think NASCAR maybe does need to look at, and I say reevaluate, like I said, they haven't had mm-hmm. to been in the position where it was really that necessary to enforce it. But I think now, especially we're talking about junior motorsports and some of these other teams trying to get in, and it doesn't seem like they can, or it's costing them too much to get said charter to get in, that NASCAR needs to maybe look at reevaluating it and, again, put a stop. Like I said, with what Rick Ware Racing is doing with the number 7, they are doing it within their own organization. I like that. And you're right. I like the 3-year of letting the team, if they are so choosing and trying, to give them that opportunity to build themselves up. I don't want to see it of you got 1 year, do it, or you're out. I don't want to see that either. You know, we got to find the balance. And I think it needs to come back a little bit, but I don't want to see him go take it away. I can tell you this up front. As much as I would like to see junior motorsports at the cup level, if they choose to go that route to be there, but I don't want to see NASCAR just say, okay, we're going to find a way to get you a charter and take it from somebody and give it to junior motorsports,
right?
Because I don't think that's right either. So like I said, there's a balance there. I just think it needs to maybe be looked at and reevaluated, again, tweaked, not changed or taken away, but tweaked.
Mm-hmm. See, I can see that. I think that, it was okay to leave it open, for manipulation, if you will, during the first, part of this, system. But you're right. At some point, they do need to take a look at it and reevaluate what's best for the health of the sport. So I couldn't agree more. Anything else that you wanted to say there?
Not on this one. I was trying to think somewhere up. I thought we had another one that kind of tied into it. But if you got one you want to go to, go ahead. I'm going to look and see where I can find what I had here for that.
Well, again, you know, this happens, and I heard it on Sirius XM today, too. People calling in saying start time should be earlier than, you know, or they should, you know, when they know weather is in the area, why don't they have an earlier start time? And, you know, it comes up every time we have a weather delay. And I don't know if it's new fans that are bringing it up each time, but there's a reason why NASCAR has the start times that they have. And I don't know, again, I feel like this source, a lot of times phrases things in a way that causes people to click on it. But when you look at it, it really isn't that big of a story. This one says NASCAR is accused of hypocrisy over the Dover decision. NASCAR abandoned the early afternoon Cup Series races on Sunday, so naturally how Sunday's race at Dover transpired left many disgruntled. Again, I think people don't understand the logistics behind scheduling a lot of these races, in that you've got to have it at a time that is going to be conducive for viewers, not just on the East Coast, but on the West Coast as well. A 12 o'clock start time, which is what this one was, means that people on the West Coast are watching, 3 hours earlier. So 3 hours earlier is an 8 o'clock start, or a 9 o'clock start. You're asking people on the West Coast to watch this race at 9 o'clock in the morning. So I think NASCAR, I don't think you can go any earlier than that is what I'm trying to get at.
What you hit on there that I'd like to go with is you're right, that somebody that gets a hold of this and wants to point out one particular aspect of it isn't looking at the full picture and all things that come into play. The other thing that comes into play is the television viewership, like you said, of from the West Coast, if they're watching it. And you want to say, why does that matter? Because that's where the majority of the money comes from. We talked about that on Monday, Thursday night, I think it was. So there are so many things that come into play, and NASCAR tries to balance that. Yes, rainouts aren't good for anybody. I go through this when it comes to the dirt track racing and making that call of when to call it off or how soon or how quickly. You know, rainouts aren't good for anybody that's involved in the sport. So, and from what I heard, the weather really wasn't even radar projected when it comes to that. If NASCAR does see it coming, they either bump up the start time if they can. Again, they got to work with, like you mentioned, the television time slot. They will try to do what they can to avoid that. Yes, for the fans that came and can't stay over till Monday, that is a pain. For the teams, it's a pain. I heard you talk about Sirius XM radio. Dave Moody and Alex Hayden, I think it was, they weren't expecting any kind of delay like that. Alex is the one that was talking about, you know, there was no indication of it. They didn't have rooms booked. So when they got delayed, you know, they got to find a hotel room. And Alex was talking about rooming with Dave Moody. And I won't go into all that. You can go back and listen to it on the podcast, the Sirius XM Speedway. But it's impactful to everybody and as a hassle. Like I said, NASCAR is aware of it. They've tried to go to a standard start time. If they see something, they know they want to get the whole race in, or at least to projected to halfway for the fans that are at the track. You know, that's, again, a big portion. But the television viewership is also a big part of it, and that carries over to what you were talking about with the West Coast, you know, of them having to then be up at being in the 9 a.m. Time window. So they got to look at the entire big picture before I think they start nitpicking. And to me, it goes back to the some people, and I'll use the word fans loosely, but just want to find something to complain about and pick apart.
I think so. The races have been starting at like 2:30 or 3:30 in the afternoon. This particular race was started earlier because it's at Dover Motor Speedway, and they don't have lights. So NASCAR already made the effort to try to start this race earlier so that they could get the whole race in, and that the daylight would not be an issue. And if it is delayed, they can go a little bit longer now that we're into longer daylight days. But I think NASCAR already made that effort to start this race a lot earlier, just keeping in mind that, they don't have lights at Dover. I think maybe more of the issue, because I also did read had Dover had lights, they maybe could have gotten the race in later in the day because the weather did clear, and they could have dried the track and they maybe could have run that race if Dover had lights. So to me, I think more of the issue is what would it take to put lights up at Dover, so that if there is a weather thing that comes up like what happened this weekend, they maybe could still handle the race on Sunday versus postponing it into Monday.
Yeah, Sharon, you brought up a very excellent point there, even for myself, of not having all the pieces. I hadn't thought about that, of tracks that don't have lights. That does come into play, and NASCAR does try to start it where they have a window if it runs long. they have any kind of delay, whether it be weather, red flag, whatever, that they got a little bit of window before they lose the track due to darkness. We saw that at Martinsville a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Dover does have the with a one-mile track, and I know we got mile-and-a-half tracks that are lit, but, again, that's not cheap to just up and light a track, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
So that is something that, again, like I said, even when you said it, I was like, man, I hadn't even thought about that, how that comes into play at different tracks. So that's where I say people need to think it through and get the entire full picture and understand what NASCAR's dealing with. It's not meeting just the fans, specifically even one person's fan or opinion on it, but mass majority, and then all the different components that go into it. I think overall they do a good job. Like I said, we've seen it, even if they can push up driver introductions and the pre-race stuff mm-hmm. by 15 minutes, a half hour, they do what they can. And that starts with, for the fans at the track, because I know that those are the ones that are going to be most impacted, obviously, if they can't stay over, as well as I mentioned, the teams and everybody else that's involved with having to stay over and stay that extra day, the impact it has on the teams. You're talking about now you're losing a day at the shop and travel time to get ready for the next weekend. This happens to be Darlington, a little bit closer, not as big an issue. But when you're talking about, say, West Coast races, if they stay over till Monday, that puts them behind by a day, and that's a huge factor. So, again,
that
it's not
is,
like
yes.
they just like, oh, we don't care, we're just going to do it on Monday. No, I mean, they know it impacts a lot of different things.
And that's an outstanding point, because nobody really wants to delay the race into the next day. Because, like you say, it just throws everybody's completely out of whack and becomes a hassle. So if they can get it in on race day, they're going to try to do it. And I think at Dover, they already had the race earlier than what they've been having a lot of these races. And, they just ran into weather that was unforeseen. So it was just one of those things. They did the best they could with the situation that they had at hand. And I think NASCAR typically does that. They do the best they can with the situation that they have at hand. So I think we got to give them a little bit of slack here.
even just now, another thought popped into my head, the difference in the tracks, Dover being concrete, one of the ones that's mm-hmm. easier and quicker to dry if they do have any kind of rain. That comes into play as far as, and they got statistics, where's Owen? He's got the analytics, I'm sure, of mm-hmm. how long each track typically, and I say typically, takes to dry and get back to race ready. So that comes into play as well.
Yes, it does. So, again, I think a lot of times fans don't have the bigger picture in mind when they are saying some of these things. And I just find it especially baffling for this particular race that this has come up, because it was already earlier than most races, and NASCAR had already done everything that they could do to avoid the situation. So it's just interesting to me that this is even a topic.
Well, and I know I think I did.
I know a lot of people were talking about it.
Yeah, well, and again, it's like they couldn't find anything else to complain about. But there are some things, and there again, I think of Atlanta, Dover. We talk about it as far as this time of year in the Southeast, the pop-up showers or whatever. I think it was somebody, I don't want to misquote, so I'll just say somebody as a representative from Dover Motorsport did say they want to try and look at a different date, maybe not as early in the spring. And I think back to Atlanta struggled with that when they lost their one race because they struggled with a spring date due to weather and then fan attendance. But the representative from Dover said, I understand NASCAR's schedule and logistics. It's not like they can just say, okay, we'll move you to this weekend. So again, they're understanding. They've brought it to NASCAR and say, hey, can we maybe get a different date that we don't have as much risk as far as weather? So, again, mm-hmm. they're all trying to work together for the best of the entire sport.
I tell you what, logistics is not an easy thing to work out. It takes a lot of effort and a lot of planning in order to make the logistics of these things work. And when you think about NASCAR having 36 races a year for the NASCAR Cup Series, and that's just one series, that's not taking into consideration what they have to put together for the Xfinity Series, the Camping World Truck Series, and all of the ARCA Menards Series races. So they've got a lot on their hands logistically to work out, and I think they do a good job, all things considered.
Most certainly, I would have to agree with that.
Okay, what's our next topic, Jay?
Let's scroll up. We'll have to play this one real carefully. Denny Hamlin was required to do sensitivity training and must start immediately.
Yeah.
I know we had this one up already on Thursday. We just didn't get to it. He was required to start the sensitivity training prior to the race this weekend, or he was going to be sat out of the race for a tweet he made following the Talladega race. And I did do a little more looking into this. I know Mike initially is the one that kind of said something about it. Following the Talladega race, Denny Hamlin had a tweet that went out. It was a clip from Family Guy that had a female Asian driver, and Denny Hamlin used that to make a reference to Kyle Larson's move at the end of the Talladega race. That's what the original tweet was. Now, since then, Denny Hamlin has started the training, and I saw several interviews where, you know, he said he's got no problem with it, with NASCAR and them requiring it. He admitted his, you know, he saw it, he thought it was funny, he posted it. He understands that maybe it was in a little bad taste, and so wasn't fighting the issue and has apologized and understands NASCAR's position.
Yeah, and you know, I noted too that Kyle Larson did a video, and he said he understood that Denny Hamlin was doing that as a joke. He did not personally take offense at the joke. He thought it was kind of funny, but he said that he knows there are millions of other Asians, though, that could look at that and be offended, and he's right about that. There are so many other people who we were just talking about, sometimes new fans that come into the sport don't have the full context of what's happening and what it takes to put the logistics of some of these races into place. And you know, a casual Asian person could look at that, not that the person is casually Asian, they're more than casually Asian, but they may be a casual fan. May look at that and be offended by it. You know, I think about, you know, we don't do a lot of Polish jokes in Chicago because there are more Polish people in Chicago than there are in Warsaw, Poland. So you have to be very, that's what sensitivity training is all about. Sometimes we all do things that we look at later and think, yeah, I can see where somebody might have been offended. I didn't intend it that way, but I can see where somebody might take offense to, you know, this particular joke or whatever. And that's what sensitivity training is all about, creating that awareness that some of the things that we do and say can be offensive to others. And it's raising the awareness bar, if you will, by asking people to go through sensitivity training so that they can avoid making those kinds of mistakes again in the future. Denny had no problem with it. Kyle Larson had no problem with it. But they both acknowledged that it could definitely be something that's offensive to millions of others that are of Asian descent. So it is important that Denny Hamlin go through this training, in my opinion. Jay, what do you
think? Well, I am not going to read Sharon. I'm sure. I don't know if you read through all of Mike's.
Yeah,
Mike
I did.
Was very fired. very fired up about this, and I partially agree with him. I don't take such a hardcore line as what he has, but I do partially understand. Again, this seems to be a societal change of people just want to harp on things. And I think a couple of situations that have popped into my head go back to Fuzzy Neller and Tiger Woods. When Tiger won, I don't know if it was his first Masters win, said something about he's as the champion, he gets to choose what's served at the dinner the next year or whatever, and made a comment. Okay. Yeah, was it maybe a little inappropriate? Okay, but Tiger didn't think nothing of it, just like you said here. Kyle Larson didn't take anything from it. It was a joke. It was not intended as a derogatory, malicious, attack. It was just kind of a joke. And thinking about it as I found out more about it, it's kind of twofold because it happened to also be a female driver that was. So you could have your female drivers that take offense to it. So I understand where NASCAR is coming from as a corporation. And Mike and I talked about this, you know, in the military, we had to be real careful about this. But there is also the, concept of take it for what it is of just a joke of humor. You mentioned, okay, and I grew up with them. Think about this. The more I thought about this, Jeff Foxworthy, they made millions off of, you know, you might be a redneck if. You're telling me that wasn't offensive to some people? Okay, but that's exactly
what it is,
just humor and entertainment, okay? And I don't feel it was anything in direct derogatory attack. Now, like I said, and just as Denny did, said, okay, yeah, go to the sensitivity training, be aware of it. I don't know that it needed to be withheld to the possibility of suspension, but or a major punishment, but just say, hey, be more aware of it. I understand that, but I also think people as a whole need to be able to take a joke. I mean, you think back of any joke you can think of off the top of your head, somebody is going to be offended by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I see Mike's point in that. Yeah, we have kind of taken it to a new level just about everything we do anymore could offend somebody. And sometimes it's just lighthearted humor. I sometimes think there should be sensitivity training on the other side too, that to recognize when somebody's doing something as a lighthearted joke and not with an intent to be disparaging of someone. Again, the sensitivity training is important. I'm glad NASCAR did it. I see their point of view. I do see where Mike is coming from. I'm not as vehement about it as he is. I'm kind of in the same vein as you are. I can see both sides of this. And yes, we have taken it to a whole new level, but it is the world that we are living in today. We're not living in the world of the 1950s. And it is a progression. It is an evolution of our society. I do think that we do need to be more sensitive about things, but I agree that sometimes we have to take a lighthearted joke for exactly what it is, a lighthearted joke. Now, if he was, here's the thing though, was it a lighthearted joke with Kyle Larson? I'm sure Denny Hamlin meant it that way, but he could have just as easily been very angry with Kyle Larson for driving across the lanes, and he might have used humor as his way to express that, but there might have been some feelings of being upset about what happened with Kyle Larson at the track too. So I think what is so hard, especially when we're talking about the written word versus somebody seeing somebody and communicating face-to-face, is sometimes it's hard to tell, are they mad when they're putting this together or is it just a lighthearted joke? Sometimes you can tell, sometimes you can't.
Yeah, and there's a couple of things me personally that I've dealt with. One of them being in the military, I said something to a supervisor about being bald. My supervisor came to me. I had to go apologize. The one I said it to had no problem with it. He wasn't offended by it. He didn't take anything, you know, disrespectful from it. But the supervisor that my supervisor who overheard it, again, had to do her job and say, hey, you got to be careful, okay? So, like you said, I understand it, but a lot of it comes down to, okay, in this case, if Kyle Larson were the one offended, then I can see where there's an issue. Now, I understand, like you said, of new fans coming in, especially if we're talking about Asian fans, okay, well, we don't want to be involved in NASCAR. They're against Asians, okay? That, you know, and I don't think by any means did Denny Hamlin have that intent. You know,
right.
Excuse me. And you could have picked every, especially when it comes to the super speedway racing. Pick any driver out there. You know, Ross Chastain's been known to be aggressive. Ricky Stenhouse. I mean, think about how many people attack Ricky Stenhouse when it comes to causing wrecks in a super speedway race because they're being aggressive, made a bad move. Brad Keselowski, another one. So that's where I said you got to kind of see, you know, understand. You could have picked any driver out there and said something about how they drove or a mistake they made in that race or a bad move, whatever. The other one that I personally dealt with was my brother-in-law is a farmer, and it had to do with chickens going to the chicken plant. They're going in to be slaughtered. PETA is upset because these chickens are sitting in a truck to go into the slaughterhouse for too long in the heat in a truck outside. They're going in to be slaughtered. You know, what does it matter if they get a little hot prior to that? So that's where I think certain people and organizations like that want to take it to an extreme just to have a cause and cause controversy and ruckus.
Well, it brings awareness to their cause.
Right, exactly. You know, we just want to have a cause and we're going to make it this. So now, like I said, do I go into Denny Hamlin and saying, hey, you know, that was kind of distasteful. It might turn off some of our viewers. Let's talk about it. Absolutely. No problem. Denny Hamlin said, you're right. I got no problem with that. But it also, on the other hand, like I said, of can you tell any kind of joke any more than because somewhere somebody could be offended by it.
Right. Right. And I get that. I get the frustration with that. So, you know, I think that everybody handled it well. Denny Hamlin, Kyle Larson. You know, my brother and I talked about it. We were saying, even if the windows were blacked out and you couldn't see if it was a male or a female driver, you couldn't see the nationality of the driver, if they could have blacked out the windows and put that out there, I don't see where anybody could have been offended by it. You know what I'm saying? So the awareness allows you to maybe think of doing something like that, maybe with some of the jokes. You know what I'm saying?
Well, in that particular case, you're right. That would have been, you're right, to actually take that part of it out of it. I think, too, now... The more I think about this, I listened to Joel Osteen, a preacher out of Houston. If you're not familiar with him, he's got multiple books out and runs a big church down there. You know, he starts every sermon with a joke, whether it be a blonde joke. A lot of times it does have to do with his wife or female. So, you know, like I said, I mean, you can attack and find fault or be offended by anything you want, but is it really a big issue? No. Does certain things need to be addressed? Absolutely. Like you said, it is an evolution and understanding of different things. To be more aware of it, I got no issue with that.
Right. If he had sent that joke privately to Kyle, that would have been one thing. But he sent it publicly. And it's that public nature of what he did. That others could see it and maybe be offended by it. And I think that's where the sensitivity training comes in and the awareness.
And that's true, too. And that may be why we have more of that in this day and age because of the, you said, the platform you can reach by your social media, that the outreach it has and the impact it can have then, even against, like we said, NASCAR, of if they're trying to pull in more viewers, they're saying, hey, this could affect our viewership,
exactly.
Not just you and Kyle. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's where I think a lot of this comes in. And like I say, if you sent it privately, let's say a text message or whatever, and he sent it to Kyle Larson individually, I don't think Kyle would have had a problem with it, according to what he said so far. So it was the public nature of it that I think created the issue. Okay, so let's go ahead and move on to another topic here.
I was going to say, I don't know that I see any that we haven't. That other one, I know we talked about, kind of, we had tied this one in. Mike's got another one up as far as the, says NASCAR tracks welcoming more fans this season. I know we tied that in the other night from Matt, if we want to talk a little bit more about that, but we see the increase in fan attendance anyway at the track.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and do our announcement real quick, and then we'll get into that. At this
all
time
right.
of the night, we usually make an announcement to all of our new listeners that are tuning in for the first time. We're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. But we will continue our conversation, and we'll record that conversation as part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So what I'll do is I'll go out on social media, Twitter specifically, to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to our player located at our website, fanforracing.com, and just fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of that conversation. And I just don't like our new listeners to be caught off guard with us going off air while we're still talking and not know how to hear the rest of that conversation. So we do this announcement every radio show at this point just to make sure everybody knows how they can hear the rest of the conversation here on our Hot Topic Sound Off. Okay, with that, Jay, they're talking about the good news is that we're seeing more people at the racetrack this year, and especially, the cup races, but also at some of the Xfinity and Camping World Truck Series races. And I do think that NASCAR is doing a better job of promoting the races. I know Mike brought it up a few weeks ago and kind of poking fun at it a little bit that NASCAR was advertising itself during the races. And I really think it's a good idea that they're doing that because they're encouraging people. They're telling people about upcoming races and where they can go to get tickets to go to those races. And think about it. If I'm a casual fan, and I'm watching this, I just happened to this race on TV, and I'm thinking, wow, it'd be really cool to go to a race. As a casual fan who's maybe tuning in for the first time, I might not know where to go to buy tickets. So the fact that NASCAR is putting that out there during the races, this is where you can go to get tickets for the race at Kansas Speedway that's coming up in a few weeks. I think that's all great, and I think that promotion that they're doing during the races is maybe one of the reasons why we're seeing better attendance at a lot of these races. Fans know where to go to get those tickets now. Jay?
This is one of those where I see so many different pieces, and I don't know that you can put your finger or thumb on one particular. You mentioned the advertising, even within their own race. Like you said, you know, Mike brought that up of it bothers him. But, yeah, I do think it is a good thing. As you mentioned, if somebody flips in for that one race, they're seeing about the next one, how to get tickets. But also, you got the next-gen car. We have seen some great parity, some different names running up front, if not winning. We've seen Ross Chastain, Trackhouse Racing, winning races. So you're not seeing the powerhouse teams of Joe Gibbs Racing or Hendrick Motorsports. I say dominating, but now Hendrick Motorsports has every one of their four drivers still picking up a victory. So that could be a factor. We're coming out of the COVID and the pandemic to a degree, little by little. So there are so many aspects to this. I don't know that you can point it at one particular thing. In this particular case, this one was saying Mike responded to it with they need to do a better job with their digital and social media platforms. And they are, but then he doesn't like how, where and how they're doing it. But that's just one aspect to it. There are so many things, and that's the reason NASCAR went to this next-gen car, make it more competitive, make it available to more teams, and get the variety. So, and that's going to lure in other manufacturers, which is going to bring in another particular fan base, I'm sure, or anti-fan base in certain cases. there is so many. Again, it's not you can't just do one thing. And when the results come in, positive results, yeah, you want to try and figure out where and how that's coming from so you can keep it up or improve on it. But you also can't then leave the focus off of some other things that I think it may be pertaining to. Personally, I think right now, I think it is the coming out of the COVID is the biggest thing that we're battling. At least I would say a major percentage of it is that recovering from the COVID. But I think the parity and competition we're seeing on the track, another big chunk of it. To me, I think the social media portion is probably the smaller portion, but is very important. I would not do it, like Mike said, of you got to do it and capitalize in that avenue, so you can't just not focus on it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I do see that doing things on social media, I'm not sure what more they could be doing. Because a lot of times I'll see NASCAR putting out a promotion of upcoming races, and those promotions for your tickets. The conversation sometimes the water cooler conversations that take place after a race sometimes will attract people as well. So. I just think that, you brought up some good points. The fact that we're coming out of the COVID restrictions and fans can now get out and do things and be a part of things that we've missed doing, I think that definitely is contributing to the increases in attendance that we're seeing. But we're not just seeing it at the track, we're also seeing it at home with the television viewing. That's been up a little bit too. Now, I did bring up last week, I think it was slightly lower, and I think part of the reason why it might have been slightly lower is because more people are not at home watching it on TV. They're not at the track watching it at the track. So, again, it's a little bit of a wash there as far as viewership. For that 1%, I think it was the decline. I think that that can be accounted for. I think the health of the sport is very good. The next gen car is certainly giving us more parity at the track. We're seeing a lot of new drivers winning. Ross Chastain, a lot of people are watching him. He's gaining a lot of fans by getting the two wins that he's gotten for Trackhouse Racing. A lot of exposure has been given to Trackhouse Racing as a result of that. People love the stories behind the scenes. And I think that's part of what is attracting people too, is they're learning more about it as well. Okay. Jay's telling me he just got booted off the show. So I'm going to go ahead and end it here. Unless Jay, if you want me to represent you, and your comments. I'll let him know that I can do that very quickly here. Okay. Anyway, so I'm going to see if there's anything that he wants me to say that might represent his thoughts here. But, yeah, if he doesn't get back to me, we'll go ahead and close this out. But first of all, I want to let people know, in the meantime, waiting for a response from Jay, that we had an interview earlier in the show, during the second half hour of the show, with Christian Rose, who is racing with Cook Racing Technologies and driving the number 42 car in the ARCA East Series this season. He drove at Dover Motors past Friday and came home with a 10th place finish. He also has done a really good job all season long. He's fourth in the series point standings in the ARCA East. He is planning to race in the ARCA Menards Series at Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway this coming weekend, again in that number 42 car. So for Cook Racing Technology, his sponsor is Visit West Virginia, and the West Virginia Tourism is a big part of his sponsorship. So look for his car this weekend. But take a listen to the interview we had with him earlier in the show. It was interesting, and you gave a chance to learn more about Christian Rose. Okay, so, Jay is saying that he's already hit on the main points, so he's pretty much done here. So I'm going to go ahead and tell our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate you taking the time to hear what we have to say, whether it's a podcast or live broadcast or the podcast. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in. And thank you to our Fanfare Racing crew tonight. That's Sal Segala, the co-host for the first 90 minutes, and Jay Huseman, who is here for Hot Topic Sound Off here tonight. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night, and we'll be back on Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. time, and look forward to talking about the upcoming races coming up this weekend. Good night, everybody.